Well, a question, what does successful Christianity look like? What image of Christian service, of serving the Lord, do we promote? Do we aspire to? What does a successful pastorate look like? A successful club leader look like? What does a successful church look like? As we serve the Lord Amy and Park Chapel, how do we measure success? How do we know if we are being a success or not as a church? Well, come with me to 2 Corinthians and chapters 11 and 12, the reading which we had. Now, in Corinth, success was admired, and this mindset had entered the church. So when certain men turned up, claiming to be something, claiming to be apostles, and they projected an aura, an image of power and strength and success, the Corinthian believers were taken in. They thought to themselves, with men like these to lead us, we will become as successful as they are. With men like this, we will become a successful church. And of course, compared to these Christian celebrities, Paul, the man who planted this church, Paul looked weak and old and unimpressive and out of touch and unsuccessful. He looked a failure. They thought, well, if Paul's an apostle, that's what we're going to call him, then these men are, compared to Paul, these men are super apostles. But the danger is very real, because these men are imposters. They preach another Jesus. So how does Paul deal with the challenge of these men? Well, these men love to boast. They love to boast in their successes. Well, says Paul, as we come to this passage, he says several times, against my better judgment, I too will boast. But of course, the Corinthians have never heard boasting like this. So what we'll do is we'll just go through the verses together, we'll unfold them, and then we'll draw the lesson. So please have those verses open in front of you. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. And of course, we're stepping in halfway through Paul's argument, and we'll pick it up at verse 23. Are they ministers of Christ, or are they servants of Christ? I speak as a fool. I'm reluctant. I don't know why I'm saying all this, says Paul. I am more. And now he's got the Corinthians' attention. They think to themselves, Paul can go one better than these super apostles. I wonder what he's going to say. Miraculous victories, power ministries, massive churches. Maybe he's got the best villa in Achaia. What's he going to say? Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant. Says Paul, no one has worked as hard or as fruitfully as me. So come on, Paul, tell us of your successes. And labors more abundant. What have you got to show for your labors? Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequently, in deaths often. From the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus 1. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. You see the Corinthians now, they're turning to each other, thinking to themselves, what sort of boasting is this? Says Paul, when I preached, there were no adoring crowds. They locked me up more times than I can remember. When I started preaching, they called the police. I was arrested. I was given a good thrashing. They flogged me. They chased me out of town. Doesn't look very successful, does it? And once, when I preached, the adoring crowd picked up stones to stone me. Gideon Ousley, great preacher of the gospel in Ireland in the 18th century. When he came to a town to preach, he would preach with his back to a shop window, because in that way the crowds would be less likely to pick up stones to stone him, because if they missed, they would hit the shop window. I remember staying many years ago with an elderly lady in Swansea, and she'd been a missionary. And she used to say when her husband and she, where they would go and preach the gospel in the open air, and they often used to look at the ground first. And if the stones were a certain size, they used to say, rather ironically, this is a good place to preach the gospel. Because if there were a certain size of rock, people would pick up the rocks to stone them. Says Paul, when I preached, no one was wowed by just the sheer aura and presence of Paul, the great preacher. They picked up stones to stone me. Well, Corinthians think, okay, Paul, you've had some difficult times. But as you travel from place to place, didn't the Lord send his angel before you? Well, says Paul, it wasn't quite like that. Verse 25, three times I was shipwrecked, a night and a day I've been in the deep. Sometimes, says Paul, I turn up late for meetings. I've been delayed, I've been shipwrecked. And my best laid plans fell to pieces. In fact, since I've been serving the Lord, I have never felt safe. Verse 26, in journeys often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils of the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren. There's always somebody after me. Wherever I go, I'm hated. And if you look at Paul's life, it seems to be teetering almost constantly on the brink of disaster. I'm not safe anywhere. And if I survive all of that and collapse exhausted and feel I can't take any more, says Paul, somebody stabs me in the back. Verse 26, in perils among false brethren. And Paul's success story just goes on. Verse 27, in weariness and toil. As you know, sometimes Paul didn't enjoy the support of the churches. He was held by some churches treated with suspicion. They weren't sure about him. So he didn't get the support of the churches. But he still had to preach the gospel. He still had to live. So it says, Paul, I had to toil. I had to get a job. I had to work with my hands. Think of it, the great apostle Paul. A man who sat at the feet of Gamaliel. Had the best education you could get. A man of formidable, giant intellect. He takes a badly paid job, which leaves him worn out. I think God can use tired people. Verse 27, in weariness and toil and sleeplessness, often in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. There'll be times when Paul turned up on your doorstep, cold, hungry, exhausted, and to all appearances, a failure. And if that wasn't enough, what really stresses me, Paul, says Paul, is verse 28, my deep concern for all the churches. Says Paul, you know, in the league table of troubles and distress, right at the top of the agenda is my deep concern for all the churches. I'm constantly on edge, waiting for news, fretting over my churches, wondering how it's going. At times it's unbearable. Especially verse 29, when God's people are made to stumble. A pastor wrote and complained to Thomas Boston. He said, I only have 28 people in my church. Boston wrote back, I think you'll find that's enough to account for on Judgment Day. Most pastors I know are on the edge. They look at their people, they look at their flock, look at the sheep, and they know that some aren't listening. They know that some are causing trouble, some are misbehaving, some are wandering off. Some are being drawn away by other shepherds. And it eats you up. It eats me up, says Paul. Well, just one church, says Paul. All the churches. Eating him up. The Christian life is killing him. Well, you can imagine the Corinthians, as Paul goes on, they're thinking to themselves, dearie me, what sort of boasting is this? Doesn't even begin to compare to the successes of these super apostles? Exactly, says Paul, verse 30. If I must boast, I will boast in the things which concern my infirmity, the things which concern my weakness. Let these men talk about their successes. When I talk, I'm going to deliberately call attention to my failures. And you get the sense, don't you, with Paul, he's really opening himself up. He's a real man. This is flesh and blood. You see, his heart is open to them. He's not hiding his struggles, not hiding his heartaches, not appearing as some invincible Superman. And says Paul, one more thing. Verse 31, the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who is blessed forever, knows that I'm not lying. So I'm going to tell you the truth now. Even the way he says it, he sort of ups it, doesn't he? What's he going to say? In Damascus, the governor, under Aretas the king, was guarding the city of the Damascenes with a garrison, desiring to arrest me. So he's shut up in Damascus. Well, he's bigged it up, hasn't he, by saying, I'm going to tell you the truth. Hear what I'm going to say. You can imagine thinking, well, how did you escape, Paul? Did God send an angel before you? Or maybe you blinded the garrison with a display of power. Or maybe you just walked up to the doors that were shut, you spoke a word, and you broke the doors down. Is that how it was, Paul? Is that how you escaped? Verse 33, but I was let down in a basket through a window in the wall and escaped from his hands. Says Paul, I was sort of bundled out the window like a bag of washing. Paul, the superhero, crouching inside a basket. What sort of boasting is this? What does successful service for the Lord look like? Well, let's carry on. Because Paul now moves on to spiritual experiences. Chapter 12, verse 1, it is doubtless not profitable for me to boast. I don't know why I'm saying all this, but I'm going to carry on. I will come to visions and revelations of the Lord. These super apostles, they love to boast in their experiences of God. They had the Corinthians on the edge of their seats. They spoke of wonderful heavenly experiences. Now, says the apostle, though there's nothing to be gained in what I'm going to say, I'm going to boast as well. I'm going to boast about revelations and visions and heavenly experiences. I wonder if Paul will have them on the edge of their seats. Now, if you look in verses 2 to 4, he says, I know a man. Who is this man? Well, it's Paul. He's speaking about himself. But he keeps it like that. He puts a distance between the Paul of today and the man who had this experience, I know a man, in case it sounds like Paul is drawing attention to himself. In case it sounds like he's saying, hey, I'm the man who went to heaven. But says Paul, he said, I'm going to talk about it in that way. I know a man. Let's keep it like that. Because I don't want you to think of me as somebody special. What I want you to see when you look at me is not Paul, the man who's been to heaven. I want you to see Paul, the man who is weak, ordinary, vulnerable, anything but special. Verse 6, lest anyone should think of me above what he sees me to be or hears from me. So he's going to boast about revelations and visions. So what was his experience? Well, look at verses 2 to 4. Says Paul, I was caught up to heaven itself, the third heaven. And I heard. I wouldn't want to hear what he's got to say now. I heard, I've been to heaven and I've been listening to what was spoken in the courts of heaven. I've heard God speaking to the angels. Paul, what did you hear? What did you hear? Well, verse 4, he says, I heard things that I can't talk about. You've been to heaven and you can't talk about it. Paul says inexpressible words which it is not lawful for a man to utter. I've been to heaven and I can't tell you anything about it, says Paul. Well, said the Corinthians, surely if you've been to heaven, surely it must have changed you, these experiences, Paul. You can't tell us what happened, but it must have done something to you. New heights of spirituality, maybe new power and victory and strength that you didn't know before. Well, says Paul, it changed me, all right. Verse 7, and lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. It says, Paul, this super spiritual experience has left me weaker. I may have been lifted up to heaven, but I've been brought down to earth. And heavenly experiences have been replaced with satanic beatings. It speaks of a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan. You had a thorn in the flesh? It's painful, isn't it? And of course, if you get a thorn in your foot, could you run, skip, jump? Slows you down, doesn't it, to a painful limp. Well, far from feeling strong, this experience, as Paul, has left me feeling weak and vulnerable. A thorn in the flesh. What was it? Well, in one sense, we don't know, do we? But Paul is a man steeped in the Old Testament, and the Canaanites were described as a thorn in the flesh of Israel. So maybe Paul, it's coded language, he's talking about not a something, but a someone. A Canaanite. Someone who's making my life a misery, says the apostle. Unless I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations. He's seen so much has been revealed to him. A thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me. But Paul, didn't you pray to God that he would take it away? Oh, I did that, says Paul, verse 8, concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord three times that it might depart from me. And the Lord heard you and granted you victory. Well, the Lord heard me. Verse 9, he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. The Lord said to me, Paul, you're more useful to me limping along. You're more useful to me going at this slow pace. You're more useful to me being weak and in pain and in trouble. Because in that way, Paul, you'll keep on depending upon me for help. You'll keep looking to me for grace. And in that way, if there's any blessing or success in your ministry, well, it clearly won't be you, will it? It won't be your doing. It says, God, it will be my doing. And every success, every blessing can be traced back to the Lord. My grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in weakness. Perfect in weakness. What does that mean? It doesn't mean, as it were, Paul feeling weak and then suddenly a great burst of power and strength. It doesn't mean that. It means Paul went on feeling weak. But God's strength was working through that weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, and this is extraordinary language, isn't it? Would you be writing this as a letter? And put your own name at the bottom of it. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. So what is the secret of Paul's success? Just one word. Weakness. For when I am weak, then I am strong. The secret of Paul's success is weakness, weakness, weakness. The Apostle Paul exhausted, and yet the strength to preach, and thousands converted. Think of that thorn in the flesh. I wonder if Paul sometimes stood up to preach and he has so much grief from this thorn in the flesh, this buffeting, this beating from Satan that he walked. He got there, his mind was clouded, his sermons were badly prepared, he's had hardly any sleep, anxious, these things churning over in his heart, thinking, there was ever a man less prepared to preach in this setting. And then as he began to preach, God came down. The warfare's killing him. He has the strength to plant a chain of churches. At his wit's end. And yet the strength to write half the New Testament. A weakling. And yet the strength to stand before kings and emperors. This small, weak, vulnerable man. In his own words, if you look in verse 11, he calls himself a nothing. But as he looked to Christ in all his need, so the power of Christ was upon him. So that when the blessing came, it can't be due to this man. It can't be his doing. It's Christ's doing. And in that way, Christ gets all the glory. So Christian friends, let's draw the lesson. What does a successful believer look like? What does someone who's making a success of the Christian life, what do they look like? Someone who's serving the Lord successfully, what should we expect to see? Should they look like these super apostles? Strong, dynamic, an aura of invincibility, great man managers, they clap their hands and people jump. Powerful, just going from one triumph to the next. Successful believers, successful servants of Christ, successful churches look like the Apostle Paul. Weak, vulnerable, rejected, suffering. Therefore I take pleasures in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. So brothers and sisters, it's when I'm weak and broken. It's when I'm afraid and fragile. It's when I feel I can't go on. When I feel this problem is bigger than me and I am afraid of it and I cannot stand up to it and it's going to be all up for me. It's when I feel the Christian life is killing me. What happens? It's then I depend upon Jesus. And it's then in all my weakness that the power of Christ rests upon me. I won't necessarily feel a sudden surge, sort of crackle of spiritual energy from somewhere. Often the sense of weakness goes on. But I find I can't walk out, and I can't give up, and I'm still there, and I'm still pressing on. And it's not in my strength. There's a resurrection life that's working in me, a resurrection life that you can't kill. So that if there's any blessing, any success, anything to share with people, and they say, praise the Lord, it can't be my doing. It's all his doing. And that way he gets all the glory. Think about it. If you wanted to change the world, would you choose Peter, Andrew, James and John? Would you? I mean, they're up in Galilee. They're up in the north. They speak with rough accents. They're fishermen. They're a rough lot. James and John are sons of thunder because of the violence of their reactions to things. Are you going to change the world through these men? These men who clearly have so many weaknesses and deficiencies and faults and personality peculiarities. Are you going to change the world through those men? Or you want the mother of the Messiah? What sort of woman are you going to choose? Would you choose a teenage peasant girl who perhaps has never moved more than perhaps a couple of miles from where she grew up? Or if you're going to confound the Bible experts in Jerusalem, we have to get someone who's, you know, Oxbridge educated, someone who's got a doctorate, someone who's perhaps media savvy, someone who's greatly respected, they're taking on the Bible experts. Would you choose a new convert who's been blind since birth to confound them? Read about it in John 9. And we could go on, couldn't we? That's God's way. God uses broken Christians, broken churches. People lionize Martin Luther, but Martin Luther got depressed. Properly depressed. John Calvin was a refugee, hedged in on every side by pressures, troubles, conflict. At home, all his children died in infancy. He suffered from migraines and a host of illnesses. If you look at them, actually, you just feel unwell just looking at the list of things that were wrong with him. And he passed a kidney stone the size of a hazelnut. Now, was he some sort of machine? You look at paintings of John Calvin, and he stands there rather tall and thin-lipped, looking very severe. Was he some sort of machine? He was a broken man. Broken man upon whom the power of Christ rested. John Wesley's marriage was a disaster. Think of Charles Spurgeon, perhaps the greatest English-speaking preacher there's ever been, Sunday attendance of 5,000. Spent a third of his time out of the pulpit with ill health. Think of Adolf Monod. I'm not sure his book is still in print. It's called Farewell. He was a great preacher, preached to hundreds. But today he's remembered for sermons, just 5 minutes, little talks given to the people sitting at his bedside as he was dying. It's his farewell, his final messages as he leaves this world. He stands on the brink of eternity. He's in weakness, and if you read, someone sat there writing down what he said, and you can see the weakness even as it's written down. You can feel the life draining out of this man. He's dying. But what he said has gone round the world and affected countless lives. Weakness, weakness, weakness. We think of our friend Jacob, don't we? Planted 30 or so churches and more cottage meetings going on in Sri Lanka from nothing. You know, 25 years ago, there was nothing. He's seen 20, 30, 40 times more blessing than most UK pastors would see in a lifetime. But then he's had 20, 30, 40 times the trouble, hasn't he? Weakness, insults, hardship, persecutions, calamities. That's God's way. That's God's equation. Because when I'm weak, says Paul, then I am strong. Success comes through weakness. So brothers and sisters, what of you? This morning as you come here, are you troubled and vulnerable, worn out? Are you distressed? Are you sick? Are you in pain? Are you broken and in need? Maybe you feel you're unappreciated and rejected. Perhaps others have labeled you a failure. Maybe you've labeled yourself a failure. Maybe you feel over the last few months, years, you've been utterly humiliated. Maybe your service for the Lord has been attacked. And all your plans have come undone and gone wrong. And you feel like the apostle, you're living on the edge. And maybe there are God's people, and the care for them and the concern for them just eats you up on the inside. And maybe you just look very ordinary. In Paul's words, you look a nothing. And is there a messenger of Satan that's making life a misery? Maybe there's someone who's just dogging your steps and you feel, I'm never going to be free from this person. Either they die or I die. But I'm never going to be free. Or maybe it's a something. Maybe it's depression. Maybe that's the black dog that follows you. Or illness. Or there have been family sorrows and your heart has been broken. Or maybe you have children. And if only, but they won't. And it breaks your heart. And maybe you feel, I'd be so much more useful for the Lord if it wasn't for this, if it wasn't for this thorn in the flesh. But all I seem to do is just limp along, half a step at a time, having to lean on other Christians. And you've prayed and you've asked the Lord to take it away. You've asked the Lord to deal with it. You think, well, I've passed the threshold when now he should have done something, and he's still not done anything. There's been no change. And you wonder how you're going to keep going. And you feel your service for the Lord, whether it's just the ordinary or the extraordinary, it's just nothing but weakness, weakness, weakness. That's all it's characterized by. Then my brothers, my sisters, recognize that where there is weakness, God is at work. Are you limping? Are you in pain? Then you're just the person that God uses. And maybe you've seen your weakness as a problem to be solved. And you say, until that problem is solved, I can't serve the Lord. And God's saying, no, I've got you exactly where I want you. That weakness is there for a reason. You're just the person for that job. I've spent some time getting you just to this point. Because now at this point, now you say, I can't do it. You're just the person I can use for my glory. Maybe Christian friend, you're ashamed of the weaknesses of others. You know, you look sideways at sometimes some God's people and you think, they're not very much. Nothing special about them. And maybe there's someone, and because of the weakness that you see in them, you constantly find fault with them. Well, be very careful. What would you make of Paul? He used to be called Saul. Remember King Saul? Head and shoulders above the rest. He was Saul because he was head and shoulders above his contemporaries. He was the pin-up boy of Judaism. But after his conversion, he styled himself as Paul. And Paul actually just means the diddy man. Paul just means the little man. The runt of the litter. The nothing. I don't want you to think of me as the man head and shoulders above the rest. I want you to look down and say, where is he? The man who's a nothing? What would you make of Paul? I mean, he's a bachelor, isn't he? A middle-aged bachelor. That rules him out for some. He's small. That's why he's called Paul. His preaching, say the Corinthians, if you look in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 10, his preaching, they say, is contemptible. And his bodily presence is weak. He's nothing to look at. Doesn't look very impressive. I wonder today how many people would travel to hear Paul preach. You know, he's not a very good preacher, is he? And doesn't look very impressive. And he doesn't enjoy the confidence of the churches. It's clear from the New Testament. You should hear the things they say about him in those churches. And, of course, he falls out with Barnabas. Beloved Barnabas. Everyone loves Barnabas. He's the encourager. What's there not to like about Barnabas? But of all the people to fall out with, Paul manages to fall out with Barnabas. Well, that's a big black mark next to Paul, isn't it? And he undermines the old traditions. It's one of the accusations they lay at his door. And wherever he goes, he meets with trouble. Well, maybe the trouble is not, you know, them. Maybe the trouble is Paul. You know, some people, they go into a shop or a restaurant and it always seems to end up in an argument. Well, maybe that was Paul. It's not other people, it's him. He's the problem. And he walks away from that open door for the gospel in Troas. And his plans are always being overruled. Now, that's interesting, isn't it? Because if he was walking closely with the Lord, he would know the Lord's mind and his plans wouldn't be overruled. But because his plans get overruled, he's obviously not walking very closely with the Lord, is he? No wonder those believers in Rome kept their distance from him. Based on Paul's weakness, we could make a very good case against Paul, couldn't we? And have nothing to do with him. But then says the apostle, all those things which you think disqualify me, he says, put them on my CV. Put them on my CV, because when I am weak, then I am strong. They're my qualifications. So, Christian man, be very careful. The weakness that you see in others, the weakness which you think disqualifies them, the weakness that keeps thinking, what again, again, and again? Maybe the very things that qualify them for the Lord's service. And therefore, Christian friend, don't feel ashamed about your own weaknesses. You know, sometimes we can keep people at a distance, can't we? We feel that they should only see a strong me, a self-reliant, resourceful me. And I keep people at a distance. Well, Christian friend, you're letting nobody down. Least of all the Lord. And anyway, who do people go to when they're in need? They go to someone who understands suffering, don't they? They go to someone who knows what it's like to be weak and vulnerable. Or maybe you've been worn out trying to keep up with the success of others. What makes our service for the Lord a success, says Paul, is weakness. For when I am weak, then I am strong. So, Christian friend, what's the answer? Well, we keep going, don't we? But we keep going in dependence upon Him. I haven't got a problem that needs to be solved. In my weakness, I need to walk with the Lord. I can't do it. I can't even do the simple things. I can't even give a cup of cold water in His name the way I should. Because I'm nothing. I'll drop the cup. But in my weakness, as I go in dependence upon Him, what do I find? His grace is sufficient. And His strength is made perfect in my weakness. And as I go in weakness, as I go in dependence, it's then that the power of Jesus rests upon me. And then when the blessing comes, and sometimes God will hide the blessing from you, you won't see it, not in this world. But when the blessing comes, well, it clearly wasn't your doing or my doing. It was the Lord's. And in that way, He gets all the glory. God uses broken Christians. God uses broken pastors. Broken elders, broken deacons, broken club leaders. Broken stewards, broken whatever. God uses broken churches. And we can say, if we take Paul's words seriously, there's a sense in which, until we're broken, we can't be used. Brokenness becomes the precursor to fruitfulness and blessing. Brothers and sisters, remember we follow a crucified Christ. Before the glory, the suffering. Before the crown, the cross. And if you follow Him, then you can expect your life to look like His. You can expect your life to be the shape of His life, to be cross-shaped. But look at that cross. Look at our Jesus. Did you ever see such weakness? A broken, bleeding, dying Savior. And yet it's the greatest triumph of all the ages. What God can do through weakness. What God can do through those who, in their weakness, depend upon Him. For where there is weakness, God is at work.